This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre, Straight Fire for Tuesday, August 17th. Great, great week of sports ahead. Not only do we have football, like, I mean, lots and lots of football, but on the QT, we've got a lot of soccer, too. I know, not a lot of soccer fans, but I got to give a shout-out to my guy who loves all my soccer talk here on the podcast. Big win for my Necaxa side last week, and they got another big game Thursday against a bad team, and hopefully they can prevail. And, hey, let's not front. MLS All-Star Game next week. Your boy will be in the house. Should be a wild one out here in L.A. But I know you're here to talk about football, and today's guest is just phenomenal. Brett McMurphy, I've known him for a long time, covered college football. He's the guy who ESPN hired. He was crushing it at ESPN, but they had a ton of layoffs, and they had to lay him off. They're paying him to not work. And as he tells the story, he ends up breaking massive Urban Meyer news on his Facebook page. It's great. You guys will love it. Brett McMurphy's outstanding. But before we get to him, just a quick two-piece for you. Number one, did you guys see the report that the next Field of Dreams game, obviously last week's Yankees-White Sox was a thriller. The game was great. The vibe, the inner, everything was awesome about that game. The TV ratings, I saw it was the most watched regular season baseball game in like forever. So there's that. But they're quick to pick the next two teams, and it sounds like it's going to be the Cubs and Reds next year. Now, obviously, they want proximity to Iowa for people to tune in and maybe attend the game and make it like a big thing and a to-do. I love this. I think baseball's thinking outside the box. I don't know what the NFL has hatched. We've seen college basketball play games on like, what was it? On like one of those big warships in the ocean. It looked cool. I mean, you know, it wasn't as awesome because it was outdoor basketball, but it still looked cool. Now, you know what's next is the NBA. What do they have in store? Something that's intimate. And sometimes, guys, a smaller crowd can be better for the fans and the experience. Like, it was tough to get a ticket for the Field of Dreams game. I think they had 8,000 fans there in a town with a population of like 4,000. So it was just, everything about it felt exclusive and cool, kind of like a New York City club. And I could go on a rant, because I love to talk about myself, about how one of the most memorable New York City repetitive nights for me was this place called Suede on Tuesday night. And you're like, Tuesday night? Well, Tuesday night's like a model night. If you're a young guy in New York City like I was, like, models don't go out as much on like Friday, Saturday. They're going to like parties. The clubs are during the week, and that's what's popping off. And I'll never forget, I had my buddy in town. I don't think his wife listens to this, but I'm not going to say his name to protect him anyway. He was on a business trip up to New York, and I said, listen, Tuesday night, I know this place pops off. How do I know this? Well, I worked at Us Weekly, and, you know, the other reporters were young, and they would say, like, oh, this place is great, and this celebrity was there, and, of course, like, you know, awesome. So Tuesday night, this place called Suede. I don't remember exactly. I want to say, like, it was in, like, the teens on the east side, and It was like nondescript. You didn't really know about it. But I knew that we would struggle to get in if we went late. So the move was we had to go a little early, look the part, and, you know, just hang there for like 3 hours until it popped off. So we go early. We're not the first people there, but we're early. And we get in because there was no line and, you know, they weren't. It was early. And I guess we looked moderately cool. So we get in and we're just unfortunately getting hammered way too early. And the place, of course, like, it doesn't feel like long, and then you turn around and boom, the place is slammed, and it's like Vegas tens everywhere. It's just an incredible night. The funniest part was me and my buddy were only like 3 years out of college, maybe 2 years out of college. And there was this girl who was like, maybe she was a freshman when we were seniors, but you could tell like she was going to run the school eventually. But she was younger, and she was there. She had just graduated. And she was at the, and she was like, oh my gosh, and like we were friends. Now we never spoke at school. She would like be at functions, but we never really spoke to her. And we were hanging out with her the whole, and she knew like, of course, a ton of people because all hot chicks do. But exclusivity, there is something to that. And I think that was part of the reason the Field of Dreams game was so damn popular. It was like, everybody wanted to be there. It was intimate. small. I mean, I think this thing's going to be a hit every year. I don't know what the NFL can do. The NBA can probably find some kind of, and I know people are going to scream, Hoosiers, Hoosiers. They could find small gyms and play it. I don't know if it'll look as good on TV. You know, the NBA crowds are crazy. Baseball crowds are good. They're not as rabid because the indoor, the noise, and the NBA games. But at any rate, Cubs, Reds in 2022. And if Fox televises that, I guess I'll do my best to try to get there. The other point, and I'm going to keep this short and sweet, is this is becoming a big day for Tim Tebow. Tuesday, I believe this is the first day the Jags will make cuts. You know, there's a chance Tebow gets cut. I personally don't think it'll happen. I think either way, people are going to be outraged. How is he still there? How? That's so unfair. Like, you guys just don't know how life works. Okay? Urban Meyer and Tebow are like living in the same neighborhood. They were coach and quarterback over 10 years ago. There's a relationship there. There's a history. There's trust. The fourth string tight end does not have that. I'm sure I'll be talking about that this morning on the Dan Patrick Show. Yes, I'll be hosting with Doug Gottlieb. If you're listening to this podcast later in the day, well, you missed me on the Dan Patrick Show. At any rate, without further ado, let's get to my main man, Brett McMurphy of the Action Network.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome in to Straight Fire, a guy who's he's been one of those interesting fellows who spent time in newspapers, right? Enough time to like really soak it up and enjoy life in newspapers. And he's pivoted so smoothly to digital. And he just left Stadium for the Action Network. So you know what that means. Cha-ching, gambling. Brett McMurphy. Brett, how are you, man?
Hey, Jason. Great to talk to you again, buddy.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think we talked, I think I was back at like the Big Lead, I don't know, like maybe 10 years ago, 7 to 10 years ago, and I think I chronicled your big move to ESPN, right?
You did, and we touched base. I touched base with you and every member of the media on the face of the earth when I broke the Urban Meyer stuff. ESPN was paying me not to work, and I was reporting on Facebook.
Facebook, that's Twitter. Right.
Yeah, so good to catch up, though.
So epic. And I just want to ask, because like I'm one of those weird guys who, like, when I was in college, cell phones started coming out, but I never had a cell phone in high school or college. But as soon as I got out, I was like, oh, this flip phone thing, yeah, this is going to be a big deal. And you were in newspapers. Like, I went to college, Brett, to be a journalist. I wanted to work at a newspaper and like cover the Lakers. Like, that was an idea of fun. You actually did that in Tampa for many, many years, right?
I did do that. When I grew up in Oklahoma City, I dreamed of working for the Dallas Morning News someday. That never worked out. I worked for the Tampa Tribune for like 20 years. But, you know, I think it was 2008 or 9. I just saw what was going on with the internet. And unfortunately, I saw what was going on with newspapers. And it sucks. I hate that. But I was able to jump to AOL Fan House. May it rest in peace. And then from there, CBS Sports, ESPN Stadium, and now with the Action Network. And again, I'm on the same trajectory with Action being, you know, look, we're not a sports book. I'm not a tout by any means, but being involved in the gambling space with all the legalization of sports betting, I think is the next move to make. And yeah. I'll be fascinated to see if other insiders, whether it's NFL, NBA, et cetera, will join on with other non-traditional media sites. I think it would be sooner rather than later. In fact, I'd be shocked if there aren't a lot more.
100% agree with you. And it's weird because there's a lot of old timers, Brett, you know them, who are just stuck in their ways and they're like, I'm a newspaper guy. I don't want to be like a digital guy and have to put out many stories. Like, I like how you have been persistent in seeing what the landscape is giving you and then adjusting. Not a lot of people can do that. I'm just curious, how has your wife and family taken to kind of the difference in lifestyle? Because it is a big difference, digital versus newspaper.
It's funny, Jason. I've had, I don't know, six different jobs in the past probably 20 years. That's the bad news. The good news is we haven't had to move out of Tampa. the entire time. So you're able to do everything mobily. But you're right. I mean, it's, you know, any old timers like that, they're dinosaurs. And Nick's, you know, Nick Saban has talked about it when he changed his offense. You either adapt or you die. And that's kind of the way I look at it. And again, a big thing is Twitter, you know, no matter where I'm at, I can stay relevant on Twitter. I can link my stories to whatever company I'm working for. And I think what really brought this home to me was when I got laid off from ESPN, I had 18 months left. They paid me not to work. I could not work. So all I could do was sit on the couch and eat fiddle faddle for 18 months, which I did a lot. Or I could
never
just
heard of that.
I could try to report stuff on my personal Facebook page, on my personal Twitter page that wouldn't violate the agreement with ESPN. And then fortunately I was able to break, you know, Urban Meyer. I broke Scott Frost to Nebraska during the UCF game when Steve Levy, I still owe him a beer for this, when he mistakenly said, first reported by our own Brett McMurphy, and I've been laid off. So you know, I've been very fortunate and very pumped about the Action Network and all the stuff they're doing there.
I had totally forgotten about the Urban Meyer thing. I mean, that was colossal. Now, we're going to focus on college, but I just want to ask about Urban Meyer. I am curious, and you don't have to answer this. Did you hear from him after you broke the story, and do you guys have any kind of relationship now, and how do you think he'll do in the NFL this year?
I talked to him at Big Ten Media Day, like the day I broke this or the day after I broke the story. And I talked to him in an interview setting there. I have not talked to him since. I have not seen him since. And I said that then, and I'll say this now. I think he is one of the greatest college football coaches presently and of all time. I don't know if that will work at the pro level. We're going to find out. You know, there's a million examples of guys that didn't work out. There's a few examples of guys where it did work out going from college to the NFL. No matter what he's done off the field and some of the curious decisions he made and didn't make concerning, Zach Smith and all that stuff that went down, he's a hell of a coach. There's no doubt about that. Does that translate to a successful NFL coach? We're going to find out.
Yeah. On meeting Urban, I am curious, like sometimes it is awkward. I had broke a story on Chris Carter when he was at ESPN and it ended up with him leaving. And then I was on a TV set with him like 2 years later. And it was awkward the very initially, but we got past that quickly. Was it awkward with Urban in the day after you broke a huge story on him at Big Ten?
No, it really wasn't, because it was a press conference setting. It wasn't a one-on-one. He later, the way the Big Ten conference sets up their media days, it's the coaches or players sit at a table or a podium and everybody kind of circles around them. So there's, you know, you're within arm's length of them, but you and 40 other media people. So no, it wasn't awkward for me. And he, you know, I asked a question, he answered it. And that was basically it.
All right, let's move to college football, Brett. So one of the biggest things now that you're at Action Network, I have a feeling that the injury spotlight in college football is going to become like a bigger story. In the NFL, the injury reports are daily, right? Everybody knows, like, if somebody's out or doubtful, what that means. Like, it's persistent throughout the week. We don't really get that in college football. As it pertains to gambling, it's kind of a big deal if a star quarterback, wide receiver, running back, you know, whatever, is not going to play. Do you think there can be an edge gained in gambling on college football, knowing big injuries? And will college football kind of adapt with the times and start revealing more information?
Is there an advantage? Absolutely so. Whether it's the Sun Belt or the MAC or the SEC, they're all – you're wagering, you know, it's still money, you know. Will they adapt to the NFL? Absolutely not. And that's the thing. The college ranks, the head coaches – the assistants, you know, as far as injuries go, you know, it's like, you know, the old Russian block. You're not going to get information out of these guys. And I've talked to several, you know, SIDs and people with ESPN about when ESPN will roll in to do a game day at a site. And basically the SIDs don't tell ESPN before the game that the starting quarterback's not going to play. because the coach is so paranoid, it's going to get out and the other team's going to be able to adapt or prepare for it. I mean, we're even talking an hour before kickoff. We don't want anything out until kickoff. That's just how these guys are wired, Jason. I don't think that's ever going to change. There are some coaches that are, you know, look, if a guy's out, he just wants to get it out. The guy's out, we're going to go with somebody else. But I would say the majority are the opposite. They do not want any injury information out there until literally the ball's in the air before disclosing that, because they think there's a competitive advantage to the other team. I don't necessarily buy it, but with all the pressure they're under, I guess I can see it.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. You know, the whole like big fish in a small pond deal, like one screw up and you get that fan base turning on you, it can move quickly. Now, I will say, even though you don't think it's going to change, and I would agree with you, we've seen so many changes in college football in the last 15 years. Obviously, the big one this summer, Texas and Oklahoma leaving for the SEC. I am curious, how do you think that's going to shake out like this year? Are Texas and Oklahoma, are people going to just hate them in conference? Is it going to be like, listen, I know it's 2025, but let's get these jerks out of here now?
Yeah, absolutely. But for the Big Ten, specifically as a league, the thing is they want to stay together as long as they can, and they want to make as much money as they can. So the thinking is they'll hold OU and Texas, their feet to the fire, and make them stay in the league for four more years. But then at some point, do you just kind of accept it? Like, look, these guys are gone. Let's just let's settle this. We're going to get a boatload of money from these guys and let's move on. That's how it's worked with every other expansion team that went from one conference to another. However, the biggest difference in this one is with OU and Texas leaving, it could ultimately lead to the elimination of a conference. So that's probably why the Big 12 is hesitant on that happening. As far as the fan base and all that, oh, it's going to get crazy. I mean, OU's last regular season game of the year in Stillwater, Bedlam. That's going to be crazy. In fact, as a joke, I tweeted that, you know, Big 12 has just changed its rules. Any player that scores a touchdown and does the horns down signal will get 9 points for a touchdown instead of six. And I actually had two OU graduates, by the way, text me and say, is that legit? Or are you kidding? So, there's going to be
hatred is real.
Oh, it's real. And it's that's why these things usually get settled and you don't have 4 years of lame duck status. But
it's like if someone's living together with someone they broke up with, you know, it's like, what are you doing? Get out of there.
Imagine divorcing your wife and then staying 4 years with your wife. Because you can't get out of your lease for another 4 years. You know?
So spin this forward. As somebody who likes to look forward on the landscape, what are we looking at here? 3-4 years from now, are we looking at four power conferences, a 16-team playoff? Where do you see this headed? And I know that I'm not going to hold you to it, obviously, oh my gosh, old takes exposed. He said this 3 years ago. Like, I don't give a shit about it. Nobody does. But where do you see this headed?
We're going to have multiple conferences with 16 teams. The question is, is it going to be four or five? How we end up at that number, that's anybody's guess. One thing I will tell you, Jason, anyone that says you definitively, this is what's going to happen, they're full of crap, because even the commissioners of these leagues don't know what's going to happen yet. There's been reports about possible alliance between the ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12 as far as scheduling. If you take it to the extreme, the possibility that those leagues may all merge together in some kind of East Coast, West Coast type deal, kind of like the NFL has the National and the American conferences. But then does that impact how many teams you get into playoff? All these other factors, when you start digging down, makes it more complicated. I do think this. I think ultimately, and I'm an Oklahoma State grad, I hate this personally for my alma mater, but I totally understand why OU and Texas did this and the SEC did this. If you think that down the road we're going to have 16-team super conferences, which I believe we do, and I think a lot of other smart people think we do, would you rather be the first to get to 16, which is what the SEC has done, or would you rather wait around and be the last to get to 16, and then your options aren't so great? So that's kind of what the ACC, Pac-12, and Big Ten are kind of thinking is, okay, what's our next move? How do we combat the SEC? Obviously, their media rights coming up in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten in the next 3 or 4 years. Also, the Big 12. So we're going to see a lot of movement. Ultimately, I think I hate this for college football, because I think you're going to see the group of five. If you think they're irrelevant now, just wait a few years. They'll, you know, they may merge with the FCS. You may have group of five schools that just drop football, because if you can't play the big money games against the power leagues, if they're just going to play each other, you're only getting $3-5 million a year in media rights. You can't compete with those other guys 365 days a year. And that sucks.
I haven't done the numbers, but if you just disband the Big 12 and parcel out their teams to the ACC, Pac-12, and Big 10, does it equal 16-4?
Well, right now we've got, if you include ACC, Big 12, the five Power Five leagues, and Notre Dame is 65.
Oh.
So you could get there. But again, Jason, the one thing is everyone think, well, why don't they just get to 16? That makes the most sense. We'll say the Big Ten, for instance. They're at 14. There's no two teams available except for teams in the ACC, which they have their media rights tied up for 15 years. So it's one thing for OU and Texas to get out with 4 years left. It's another thing for a team to get out with 15 years left. We're talking hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of rights fees you would forfeit. So if the Big Ten can't get anybody from the ACC, the only options they have is teams from the Big 12, maybe get somebody from the Pac-12, as crazy as that sounds. But the bottom line is, the only reason you do that is if you can increase the value of your media rights per school. So just because you add two teams doesn't necessarily mean that each team is going to make more money. You may add two schools and the pieces of pie get smaller. Right. So then there's no reason to expand.
So somebody had texted me, oh, hey, what about USC to the Big Ten? And I'm like, well, what are you going to have, like, the Michigan softball team traveling to L.A. to play a game? Like, I don't know how – like, I know we only think about football and that's all that matters and the big money, but does anyone else matter at this point? I mean, it does seem a little strange, does it not?
Well, look, anything and everything's on the table, as crazy as that sounds. So could USC be in the Big Ten? Yes, they could. What happens with the Olympic sports? I think what would happen is you would have the Olympic sports where they would just play teams in their region. So they necessarily wouldn't travel, you know, you wouldn't see USC at Rutgers volleyball. And then basically the only time they would compete would be at a conference tournament or an NCAA tournament or something like that. So the scheduling that you and I are familiar with, where you play everybody in the conference, whether it's basketball, volleyball, softball, etc., that would obviously be tweaked to make whatever works for football, because, you know, again, football is the one that drives the bus. That's where all the media rights are. And so, yeah, I think that's the least of their concerns, is what they're going to do with the Olympic sports. It's more, how are we going to survive long term with these new media rights coming up? And also, everyone doesn't want to get left behind the SEC as far as the media rights. So that's why they're thinking of all these different scenarios, and it's going to be fascinating. And I'm sure, you know, you'll be talking about various different reports. Some of them are, most of them are going to be just guys throwing crap against the wall. But they may be throwing up trial balloons just to kind of get a read on how this stuff would work out.
Yeah.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, on to college football for this season. You know, when we headed into last year, it was like everybody knew Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields were like the two best quarterbacks in the country. Obviously, Mac Jones kind of popped up and Zach Wilson had a really good year. But this year, maybe it's me, but I don't know that it's as clear cut that, like, who the best quarterback is. Some people are saying Sam Howell from UNC. Like, I would say the majority of people who listen to this podcast would not know him if he delivered DoorDash to them, like, today. Spencer Rattler would probably be the biggest name. Is that accurate? Like, who's the best quarterback in college football?
Well, best, or who's got the lowest odds to win the Heisman? I mean, right now,
I would say best.
Yeah, best. I would put Sam Howell up there. I would put Slovis at USC.
Yeah.
JT Daniels at Georgia, if they actually let him do more than hand the ball off, which they did the last four games of the last year, and they actually had a lot of success. I think Rattler will put up monster numbers if there's any, you know, college football fantasy guys. I don't have to tell them that. You look at Lincoln Riley and what he's done at the quarterback position. It's incredible. Heisman finalist the last 3 years. So I expect Rattler to be in New York. But as far as the best, it's not like the NFL where you're comparing apples to apples, because the leagues are so different. The style of offenses, mm-hmm. the quality of defenses are different in league to league. You got Corral at Ole Miss, who's going to put up monster numbers with Lane Kiffin.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not answering your question who the best one is, but
it's tough.
Yeah. I mean, I think Sam Howell's legit. And with Mac Brown there and what they've done, a lot of people are expecting big things out of Carolina, their preseason top 10 ranking, in that league after Clemson, in Carolina and maybe Miami, you drop off a cliff in that league. So, I believe Carolina's going to be favored in either all 12 games or 11 of 12 games in the regular season. Wow. They don't get Clemson. So obviously Heisman odds wise, you want somebody on a team that's going to have a lot of success. If Carolina doesn't stumble, Sam Howell's got that shot to do it. Kind of like Joe Burrow came out of nowhere when he led LSU to the national title.
Let's talk about Alabama, because everybody loves to hate Alabama. They lost 6 first-round picks to the draft, which is crazy. I saw somewhere where they have 5 new coaches on the staff for Saban. A lot of change there, but it's Alabama. They just reload right there. Is this still, the team to beat? I mean, do you think Alabama should be one of the favorites to win the title?
You know, Jason, I vote in the AP poll and every preseason. Well, for the past few years, I'd sit there and I'd consider what you just said. Saban's got 5 new assistant coaches. They just lost 6 guys in the first round. They just lost double digits to the draft. They got a new offensive coordinator. They're certainly going to drop down. I'm gonna drop them from 1 to 3. That's a huge. And then what happens? Saban proves you wrong. And you brought up valid points. Bill O'Brien's a new offensive coordinator. You lose half a dozen first round picks. They are a lot more inexperienced this year than they have been in past years. But, dude, you can't bet against Saban. I mean, you just can't. And they were number 1 on my preseason ballot. They were number 1 voted by AP. I think Georgia's got a chance to challenge him. But with Georgia, there's a lot of mental issues there as far as Alabama. They haven't beat Alabama. Kirby Smart hasn't beat Saban. Saban hasn't lost to a former assistant coach. So Georgia's got to get over that mental aspect, because they had him in a title game Tua hit him in overtime. So it's I definitely think Alabama's a team to be. It's again, let's just look at the last 4 years of your preseason podcast, and it's the same old song and dance: Oklahoma, Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, and that's the 4 again. Throw Georgia in the mix. A&M's got an outside shot. They've got to beat Alabama also, and a lot of people like Iowa State. Everyone's got everyone back because of the super seniors, but they most talented team they've had. Matt Campbell's an unbelievable coach. They have one in Norman. Can they win a Big 12 championship? If so, they're certainly going to be in the playoff and could be a contender.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be in Vegas soon. And somebody I respect said, listen, just put a couple shekels on Texas A&M. Just do it. They get Alabama at home. I guess that's going to be the only game Alabama's not a double-digit favorite this year.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know. A&M, I'm not a huge Jimbo Fisher guy. That's the only thing. Like, I know he won a ton at FSU, but he had the best players all the time. I don't know, Brett. Talk me out of Texas A&M or talk me into him.
I'll give you obviously he won a national title at Florida State. He's also one of 8 active head coaches that had a team that was ranked in the top 10 in the preseason and finished the year unranked. That happened at Florida State. they come in at number 6 this year. Like you said, A&M's going to be favored in 11 of 12 games. That one game's Alabama. So basically, for your shekels on A&M, I guess there's 2 ways to look at it. I would put a small shekel on A&M to win the national title. I would put more shekels on A&M money line against Bama, because they're not going to win the national title if they don't beat Alabama. And so if A&M should lose before you get to Alabama, then you don't have to play the money line against Bama, because your national title odds are shot. So that's kind of how I would couch it. Everyone keeps waiting. And when you're Jimbo Fisher and you make, you know, sign a $75 million contract, it's not fair, but the expectations are a national title or bust. They've got an empty trophy case waiting to put a national title trophy in there. You know, maybe Saban proves he's human this year and they drop a little bit and actually lose a couple of games. But, you know, obviously you're going to need big numbers to take anybody other than there's not a lot of I've looked at the number. There's not a lot of value. You know, you can take a flyer on somebody, but they're, you know, ultimately they're.
By the way, I don't have it offhand. What was LSU that year Burrow erupted? I mean, they kind of came out of nowhere. They weren't like one of the favorites, right?
They were probably like 30 or more to start the year because they actually started the year. A lot of people don't remember this. They were sixth in the AP poll in the first preseason poll. The thing with Burrow was he was like 100-1 or more to win the Heisman. Because nobody really knew anything about him. And then, you know, he won the Heisman when they won at Alabama. You know, so that's like when you're looking at Heisman and all the people we just named about the top quarterbacks, there's probably going to be somebody we didn't name that's going to win it. Cause that's just how it is. They come out of nowhere. Like if I'm spent the worst thing for me is to be the Heisman Trophy favorite. Cause all anyone's going to do every week is dissect what you did wrong. They're not going to say, oh, Rattler threw for 400 yards and 3 touchdowns. They're going to say, Jesus, you see that interception he threw? That guy's no good, you know, because he's the favorite. And that's what seems to happen as far as the Heisman race.
I want to wrap up with name, image, and likeness real quick. First of all, hey, this Bryce Young getting $1 million. I think Lane Kiffin was the one who floated that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, do you think that's remotely accurate?
No, Saban actually floated it. He was talking at a Texas high school coaches convention, and basically said that his quarterback had in the range of 7 figures. Well, look, $100 is in the range of 7 figures when you get down to it. So, you know, could he get 7 figures? Absolutely. Does he already have 7 figures? I seriously doubt it. I mean, coaches do one thing 365 days a year, and that's recruiting. And that's what Saban was doing when he's talking to all these Texas high school coaches. So, you know, look, Bryce Young, I didn't mention him. Alabama runs a table and he puts up numbers like Mac Jones did. He may be winning the Heisman. So, will he end up with 7 figures? I'm kind of doubtful on that, but you know, I mean, this is uncharted territory. So we could see people making this. Does this keep kids in college a year longer now too, if they have a chance to rake in this money, potentially comparable to maybe an NFL contract?
That angle I had not thought of, but the recruiting angle is very funny. Of course, Saban says that in the state of Texas. Very fertile recruiting ground. But then you had the kid leave from the state of Texas to go to Ohio State early.
So he's already
enrolled.
Yeah, so he skipped his senior year because the state of Texas doesn't allow, I guess, NIL for high school players. So he's like, well, I'm going to skip my senior year and I'm going to go to Ohio State because of NIL, because he's going to make money at Ohio State. Look, that's great. More power to him. I don't know about you, but I freaking love my senior year of high school. I don't know if I could do that, but I also wasn't the top rated recruit in the country either.
Yes. Yeah. Our experiences in college as a freshman, little different, but you bring up a good question though. Like, I don't know, how much can these guys make? And at what point though, do we start to see, I don't know, maybe divisions in the locker room? Like if you're making a ton of money off NIL and you start rolling up in, I don't know, a Lamborghini or a super awesome ride, is there a chance to turn off some of your teammates? Could that be a wedge in any way, shape, or form? Or is that a coach's job that we just, you report on it, the coaches decide?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, like the Eric King at Miami, he's already said that he's going to share his NIL stuff with his teammates. You've seen a couple other players have done that. And also everyone, whenever they bring that argument up, and I think it's valid, but when everyone brings that argument up, it's like, that's exactly how it is in the NFL. Do linemen not block for Brady because he's making more than a small country gross national product? No. You want to win, you want to do what's best. So if the guy, in like the NFL, if the guy's an asshole, then you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to play hard for him. You're not going to work for him. If the guy's a good guy, you know, they'll deal with it. You know, I mean, the quarterbacks, the running back, the receivers, they get all the media attention anyway. Now they're getting compensated more. It's not anything new. And shoot, there's a ton of offensive lines that are getting sponsored by these barbecue restaurants. So that, you know, that's all they're worried about.
Smart.
Right now.
Yeah, I do love the NIL thing. All right, Brett McMurphy, follow him. He's at the Action Network. A lot of gambling. Are they going to make you do picks every week, Brett, or did you talk them out of that?
No, I think I may do some. You know, I'm not, you know, it's obviously, you know, I will do them early enough. So it's not like, oh, by the way, I know Bryce Young's not playing this week and I'm not going to report it for 4 days until I place a wager against Alabama. So no, I'm not going to do that. But, you know, I'm sure I've done it in the past, whether it was on Twitter or with ESPN or CBS, and even Stadium, where I did, you know, your cliched picks column. So I'm sure I'll throw some stuff out there and, you know, just take the opposite side and you'll do well.
Yeah, fade Brett. All right, Brett. Hey, thanks a lot. Continued success. Congrats on the new deal, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jason.